A cholera outbreak in 1994 brought bulldozers scraping bodies into mass graves near Goma, Zaire. Television cameras captured the horror, and within days, $1.5 million poured in daily, the best-funded humanitarian operation in history. But here's what donors never saw. These weren't genocide survivors fleeing violence. They were the perpetrators. The camps housed the entire extremist Hutu government that had just orchestrated the slaughter of 800,000 Tutsis, complete with their army, militia, national bank assets, and plans to return to power. Welcome to the Crisis Caravan, an $11.2 billion global industry where 37,000 international aid organizations operate in a moral minefield that would have appalled the founders of modern humanitarian work. Henri Dunant established the Red Cross on principles of neutrality after witnessing battlefield carnage in 1859. Florence Nightingale vehemently opposed him, arguing that voluntary aid merely lets governments shirk responsibility. Their unresolved debate echoes through every crisis today, because in modern conflicts, where 90% of casualties are civilians, humanitarian principles become unenforceable. Expecting armed groups to respect aid neutrality is like asking muggers to follow boxing rules. Within months of arriving in Goma, Hutu extremists transformed refugee camps into permanent settlements with boulevards, restaurants, and thriving businesses. Behind this facade, they maintained strict control, levying war taxes on aid distributions to fund continued attacks. An estimated 60% of humanitarian supplies were diverted to military operations. Inflammatory radio broadcasts blared propaganda with headlines like, "Crushing a cockroach isn't murder, it's a hygiene measure." Aid organizations knew their assistance was being weaponized, yet they expanded services while keeping quiet, fearing bad publicity would reduce donations. They inflated refugee numbers to compensate for losses and employed thousands of Hutu extremists, including medical staff suspected of murdering disloyal patients. As one MSF staffer later admitted, "We wondered how many had blood on their hands, but pushed these thoughts aside." The charade ended in 1996 when Rwanda's Tutsi army invaded, drove out aid workers, and burned the camps. The subsequent invasion of Congo triggered Africa's First World War, causing an estimated 5 million deaths by 2010, a catastrophe directly linked to misguided humanitarian response. Humanitarian work operates as a cutthroat business, what one former Oxfam director called a moral economy. Organizations compete fiercely for contracts and funding, each fighting for institutional survival. Modern aid work demands expertise in marketing strategies and cost-benefit analyses rather than simple goodwill. With growing donor budgets and increasing agencies, competition is brutal. Organizations that miss new disasters lose funding opportunities. High startup costs in crisis zones mean agencies must secure ongoing contracts to recoup investments. Media attention is crucial for attracting donors. As former UM Secretary General Boutros Ghali noted, CNN was the 16th member of the Security Council. Without broadcast images, donors take little action. Aid organizations now embed journalists, providing free flights, transportation, and accommodations. This creates skewed perspectives. Viewing crisis zones through an aid lens shows only victims: half-naked Africans in camps, children with flies in their eyes, mothers with breasts like used tea bags. When donor money shifts to new crises, organizations must quickly follow, abandoning one suffering population for another. This contract fever undermines any principled stance they might take. Murraytown Camp in Freetown, Sierra Leone, housed 226 amputees whose limbs had been hacked off during civil war. Despite crowded, dirty conditions impractical for disabled residents, they refused relocation to better facilities. Their strategic roadside location made them accessible to foreign journalists and donors, accessibility they wouldn't sacrifice. As icons of Sierra Leone's war, these amputees became the victims aid workers most wanted to associate with. International media descended like pit bulls in a kindergarten. 4 years later, the camp still received 3 to 4 international delegations daily. One Dutch diplomat called it the Vilendum of West Africa, a tourist attraction no visitor could miss. Despite amputees already having multiple prostheses, donations poured in, with piles of unwanted artificial limbs accumulating in corners. Most disturbing was the removal of children by Western organizations. In 2000, an American representing Gift of Limbs arrived with passports for 6 child amputees, claiming they needed American prostheses. Despite protests that the children already had prostheses but hid them to receive more aid, the 6 were secretly taken to America, becoming media sensations and even addressing Congress. By 2007, one appeared on Oprah with her adoptive family. When asked about her Sierra Leonean mother, Oprah surprised her by bringing her mother onto the show, thin, bent, wearing her prosthesis, before returning to her mud hut after her visa expired. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan called aid not charity, but their right when requesting $3 billion for the world's poorest countries. Yet only a fraction arrived because aid functions as a favor granted when convenient, not a right. The crisis caravan moves selectively, creating donor darlings who receive abundant aid while donor orphans receive little. One UN official called it a lottery, where 25 equally desperate communities compete weekly, but 24 lose and one wins. During the 1994 Rwandan genocide, Tutsis inside Rwanda received almost nothing, while international money flowed to Hutu refugee camps in Goma. General Romeo Dallaire described desperate conditions, contaminated water, rotting crops, no fuel, while Goma camps housing genociders had twice weekly waste collection. In 2004, less than a quarter of development aid went to the poorest countries, with most flowing to war on terror frontline states. Tsunami victims received $1,200 per person, while Congo received just $10 despite 3 million deaths. Most disturbing is how this incentivizes violence. Sierra Leone's rebels deliberately escalated brutality to attract attention. One RUF leader explained, "Without the amputee factor, you people wouldn't have come." Another articulated the perverse logic, "War means waste all resources, destroy everything, then you people will come and fix it." The humanitarian aid system resists examination, with emotional responses reducing complex issues to doing something versus doing nothing. Aid organizations invoke humanitarian principles as shields, comparing their work to emergency rooms treating all patients. This analogy fails in war zones lacking justice systems. The Red Cross's silence during the Holocaust established a troubling precedent, echoed in Ethiopia's forced resettlement, Rwanda's genocide, and Darfur, where aid organizations became involuntary collaborators with oppressive regimes. Despite reform initiatives like the Sphere Project, the system operates with insufficient oversight. Organizations compete for funding and attention rather than coordinating effectively, creating vulnerabilities warring parties exploit. The fundamental dilemma persists. Should aid continue when evidence shows it prolongs conflict? The crisis caravan continues globally, leaving complex questions about humanitarian intervention's true impact. Until the humanitarian community confronts these realities, the noble impulse to help will produce unintended consequences that may harm the populations these efforts aim to protect. The challenge isn't whether to help, it's how to help without becoming complicit in the suffering we seek to end.